Aren't you interested in learning breakthrough wealth building strategies, such as how to flip a home in less than 2 weeks using other people's money with no real estate license, or how to build a low-cost home-based business? You can discover how to take passive income from any source and invest it into real estate, stocks, or business to become financially independent investing in any market with Residual Roads Business Institute. Collaborate with Andre and other Residual Roads advisors to create a free action plan and start implementing strategies today. Go to www.residualroads.com or email info@residualroads.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. You've been searching for different ways to become financially independent or generate passive income to live out your life's purpose as you've seen others do it, but need insight on how. Well, get excited because here you'll discover the tips and resources to fulfill that need. Andre Stewart has spent more than a decade successfully making it happen for himself and others. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to another episode of Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. It's been a long time since I talked to you guys, so I wanted to hop on and finally give my thoughts on what's going on in the economy. You guys know I tore my Achilles, so I was kind of down for the count with that because I wasn't able to work out and things like that. And I'm also in the process of writing another book. And you know, if you read the first book, I wrote that book during the health crisis. You know, I don't want to get censored. And then I tore my Achilles and it made me want to write another book because I had more time. So that's going to be a good book as well. Look out for that one coming out. I don't want to give you the title or anything like that until it's ready to be published. But I think it's going to be a good book. You're going to like it. It's not real estate related, but it's still going to help change your life, in my opinion. So be on the lookout for that. But anyway, I wanted to talk to you guys about what's going on in the economy. You know, I voice my opinion on what I think about that. And it hasn't been a lot lately that I felt was worthy of bringing it up. But layoffs and this post-health crisis labor force, I got to talk about it, man. In addition to that, I got to talk about what's going on in the global economy. It's a lot worse than people think. And you know how I always talk about mainstream media keeping things away from people. And they're doing it right now. If you guys don't know, which I'm pretty sure a lot of you don't, there was a coup taking place or trying to take place in Germany maybe 2 days ago. Today is December 8th. And that's crazy, right? That doesn't really happen if everything's going lovely as they try to make it out to be. But what makes this even crazier, that there was another one in Peru the next day. So the world is obviously doing so fantastic that two different regions of the world are having coups on their governments. Man, this is amazing. So you guys know I stopped talking about the economy and what was going on because now it's mainstream, right? Now you don't got to hear from me. And I told you all of this was going to happen and it's going to get worse. It's just going to continue to get worse. And them doing coups, I mean, Peru, I get it, right? Third world country. But Germany? Oh, man. So it's getting interesting out here. And I always say what you see happen in other countries tends to make its way toward the U.S. at some point in time. And I'm not saying we're going to have a coup, but I mean, January 6th happened. So it's not that far-fetched like it was before that happened. Like we could sit here and be like, it'll never happen in the U.S. Yeah, it kind of did. But anyway, this goes into what I'm going to talk about, the layoffs that are going on. All of this stuff is happening, not just in the U.S. We're actually a lot better off than a lot of other countries. So we're benefiting from the dollar being the reserve currency. So we haven't had the shit hit the fan here yet, but it's about to, because what people don't know, you know, they think that we only have $31 trillion in debt, which is a lot, you know, which is a lot considering $7 trillion of that just came out of nowhere in the last 2 years. But they discovered another $65 trillion in hidden debt in the foreign currency exchange market. And that goes back to like these companies and other countries need to borrow funds, and they borrow those funds at a higher rate. And obviously they use it from a different currency. So that's going on in the market as well. And no one's talking about that. So not only do we have 31 trillion, we have 65 trillion in debt. Where's the money going to come from, considering all the economies are slowing down? Yeah, I don't know. You guys tell me. It's interesting how this is all going to play out, and it's just the beginning. So people are out here talking about layoffs. I don't condone layoffs, but I understand layoffs. And you got to understand that there are going to be more to come if the economy is doing bad globally and then inflation super high and they're trying to decrease inflation through raising interest rates. We talk about this all the time, so you guys know what happened was that. If you, as a business owner, have to choose between your company staying alive, and say you have 100,000 customers or 200,000 customers, if you have to choose between your company staying alive and say you have 2,000 employees, and you got to fire, I don't know, 500. If you got to fire 500 or lay off 500 people to save maybe 150,000 customers, because you're going to lose some, and the other 1,500 employees, who are you going to lay off? Right? You got to lay off the 500. And out of that 500 that they lay off, do you think it makes sense to lay off someone who is very productive or someone who is basically half-assed in it? And you should have been fired them, but you didn't, because you had easy money coming in because interest rates were low. So you could afford to carry somebody because you were borrowing money from the bank, and then you were probably making revenue. And so you had 200,000 customers and growing to 250 or 300. So you could project out that your business was going to keep growing. But now that you can't do that, do you not think it makes sense to trim the fat? Or should you, I guess, pacify or like lose money or lose the 200,000 customers that you have and let the 2,000 people that you employed, all of you guys, basically lose your jobs? The customers get to lose whatever service you provide. Does that make sense? So if I can trim the fat and let go of a bunch of people that I should have let go a long ass time ago, I'm going to lay some people off. And you got some of these CEOs out here that are saying, I can't believe this. I can't believe these CEOs are out here laying people off. Yeah, okay, then how about you take some money from your company and lend it to them so they can keep going and keep some of these sorry workers that they have employed? Like, people change. Like, if you have more money, think of it as your own household, right? If you had an additional $2,000 a month, are you going to care how much you go out to eat? Are you going to care about going out there and paying for like a 200, 300, 400 pair of shoes? Like, you're not going to really care about it because you got the extra income. So you can do some, you know, dumb stuff or spend on something that's not that important because you got more money coming in, right? You got a job. But if that money starts to dry up, and you start to, you know, lose that discretionary income, or you lose your job, are you going to keep going out here and paying for $200 pair of shoes? Or are you going to keep spending money on the restaurant that you can't afford? You're not going to do that because the easy money is not there for you to be able to do it. So these companies are doing this for the benefit of the customer. They're doing it for us. They're doing it for the consumer. They're doing it for the other 2,000 or 3,000 people that got to feed their family. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, I'm going to trim the head. I'm going to trim off like, you know, 400 or 500 people to save 1,500, right? I'd rather lose 500 than to lose 2,000 people. So, you know, this mainstream media or whoever these CEOs that are trying to, you know how I talk about people out here steering the narrative. Yeah, and it goes back to Elon Musk. The dude was bleeding $41 billion negative. Yeah, he should go in there and lay off 75% of the staff because they're not even needed. So he's supposed to carry. Man, if I spend, you know, $40 billion on a company and then I go in there and we negative $41 billion and I got a bunch of staff who aren't doing anything, you damn right I'm going to fire them. I should. Yeah. So now do I got to go out of business just to make sure? So I don't eat. I'm not supposed to eat. I'm not supposed to take care of my family. Elon Musk got like 9 kids. I don't know if people know that. So he's not supposed to feed his 9 kids for the sake of some people that just come to work whenever they want to come to work, or they not working and not making the platform better. Man, yeah. So a lot of times people that don't have a business or never ran a business have ideas on how people should run their business. Okay, how about you go out there and hire one person? Hire one person first. Manage that one person while you have a job and see how hard that is. And then try to scale from 1 to 3 employees and then come back and then see if you have that same opinion about why people are out here laying people off. So I think, you know, don't go with the narrative of what people are saying about layoffs. Like if you want, you know, look at Walmart, for instance. Walmart is sitting here saying they got to close some stores up because theft is really high. You know, that goes back to some of the policies you heard me guys talk about before that the government did. The government's out here like, yo, you can steal up to $900 and it's not a big deal. Like you can get arrested if you get arrested, or we're going to slap you on the wrist. So even if you get arrested for $900, you're not going to get charged for it. Right. It's a slap on the wrist. So, yeah. OK, then. Are we saying that it's okay to let people go in there if 200 or 300 people, or let's say 1,000, if 1,000 people go to Walmart and steal $900 worth of stuff, who is going to pay for that, right? Every company that, you know, provides a service or sells a product, they probably have a loss prevention department. But yeah, who you still don't just let $90,000 go out the window. You know what I mean? Like, that would be crazy. So if you multiply that, because Walmart's huge, like it's like the biggest, I would say, wholesaler, because that's what kind of what they do. It's like the biggest place to go and get discounted stuff. So you're stealing from a discount store. They are already getting it, you know, at cost. And then they're probably selling it at a, you know, a decent profit margin. But like once they start losing money on that, yeah, they got to do something. People just expect people to just take it. Like the companies or businesses are supposed to just take everything and deal with it. And there should be no repercussions for the business. Like, no, just your business. You should be able to sustain this. Yeah, I don't think people get the concept of, you know, why these businesses have to do what they're doing, because they don't have a business, so they can't get it. But back to, you know, the layoffs in this post-labor market, it's a lot different. I can't be the only one that has been experiencing horrendous customer service. It doesn't matter where you go. Anybody listening to what I'm saying right now has had to have a worse experience than they had before 2020. Going to get food from a fast food restaurant is not the same. Going to Walmart, going to CVS or the drugstore to get medication is not the same. You can count probably on your hands and toes about all the places that you've gone in the last 2 years and be like, God damn, like what is happening? Why is the service so bad? Because we essentially changed the natural way that people think about working, right? They had the ability to not work for a whole year and still get paid, which has changed the mindset. So the labor market has changed forever. So with the labor market changing, then obviously businesses have to change. So I mentioned this, I think, you know, the last time I did a podcast, and I said that the middle class is going to change, because now what businesses might do, because I know for me, I know I got like 5 employees that I should have been fired, but I can't fire them because I don't pay them as much as I would have to pay some other people. So I deal with it and I'm like, God, man, I wish I could fire them so bad, but they do enough. So where I'm like, you know what? Let me try to, because I don't think people know that it costs a lot of money to bring on a new employee. So you'd rather just roll with the employee that you have versus spending the money and retrain somebody. So even if they've been there for 2 or 3 years and they suck, it's a lot easier to pay them, you know, whatever you're paying them, and just and keep them on the labor force, unless it's like your bottom line is just suffering that bad, which a lot of companies are starting to feel that. But if you can lay off the middle class people that are making $200,000 or $300,000 because they've done their job in the, you know, you got a product or a service that's just flowing and it's on autopilot, then you're going to let that mid-level worker go versus the lower end, the people at the bottom. So if I pay, say I'm paying my top person $100,000 a year and they're just one person. If I fire that one person, I can save $100,000, right? So I lost one person, but I got back $100,000.
I would have to fire at least 10 or 15 people in the lower part of the divisions or the lower part of the workforce to come up to $100,000, right? So I'm better off letting this middle worker go and keeping the 10 or 15 people that I can now put more work on. So that's what I think we're going to see. And that's what's starting to happen. We're seeing people at these tech companies get laid off because they were the mid-level worker making $100,000 to $200,000 a year, or they could have been a top executive making a lot of money. So it's just easier for me to trim the cost on something that's already kind of on autopilot and then outsource that to India or somewhere else and then keep the other low-wage workers, which I got like, you know, 40 or 50 of those low-wage workers, then I can be like, yo, here go another task, here go another task. If I need some maintenance on, let's say, one of my products, I can just be like, yo, India, because India got some great coders. I can go to Ukraine. I can go anywhere and just say, hey, we need you guys to service this particular part of our platform for 30 days or 2 months. Pay somebody 10 or 15 grand. They fix whatever that is. And then you move on. Right. So they were able to carry all of these mid-level executives for so long because they had the money to do it. Now they don't have the money to do it. And so that's what we're coming into. So you're going to start seeing Amazon, you see it with Netflix, you see it with all these companies, man, they're firing mid-level executives. Because now, if you trim 5 or 6 or 10 of those people that were making $200,000, $300,000, you just gained a whole bunch of money back, man. For one, you gained a bunch of money back to add to your bottom line, just in case you need to, I guess, trim the cost or you got to pay more for goods. Boom, you can do that with that those salaries. You know what I mean? So in addition to that, you now have more money on your balance sheet to carry you through the recession. And you guys have heard me say this before. I think this is going to be a 2 or 3 year thing.
Have you ever thought to yourself, I wish I could get into real estate investing? You can change this as quickly or as slowly as you want to now. Imagine yourself networking and making new connections in real estate globally, or buying an investment property in a market or country that fits your needs. People do. They know what I'm talking about. And now you can too with InvestFAR. Connect and join the network. Remote investing made safe and easy.
So letting all those folks, being able to sell all that money is going to get you to the other side. And it ain't got anything to do with people are CEOs being cruel. It ain't being cruel, man. It's just looking out for the best interest of the consumer and everybody else and to keep that business around, because there's got to be some businesses out here that you guys love. And if they went out of business, you'd be sad about it. And so they're doing that for the sake of you guys, right? I mean, these CEOs and heads of these companies probably got enough money to walk away, but that's their passion and they love doing it. And also that's going to be a huge detriment to you guys. A CEO can quit and go on about his business and be fine, but what if he does that? And those 2,000 or 3,000 or 10,000 people that are in the lower income, what happens now, man? The cascading effect on that in the economy is going to be brutal. And you just hope those mid-level executives who did make a lot of money did save a lot of that money so they can weather this storm more than somebody in the lower income or somebody that's a low-level employee. So look at the narrative a lot different than the way you're looking at it, man. It's a different spectrum, man. When you're a business owner, you see things from a different lens. And so we're in the beginning of this, and I'm not saying that they're not going to come for these low level jobs. It depends on how bad this recession gets, and the way it looks, it's going to get worse. And I think it's a 2 or 3 year thing. So if they're trimming the fat, and these are probably some good workers that are mid-level executives, but they're not needed anymore. And so they don't have the money to just be out here paying people just to be sitting at a desk or doing nothing, or even most of these people are working from home. So that's even more of a reason you don't even see them. So you don't even got any emotional connection to them. So it's a lot easier to just lay these people off. And that's kind of what's going on, man. These people are trying to make sure that these companies are still around in the next couple of years so you guys will be happy. So watch out for the narrative, man. And if I were you, I would probably pay attention to Walmart. I gave the example earlier of 1,000 people stealing from Walmart at $900. If you do the math on that, that's $900,000. And that could be one store. I don't know no business that can take a $900,000 hit every month. Or if you did, say, you know, like I said, Walmart, everyone knows Walmart. You can go to Costa Rica, there's a Walmart. So just imagine if $900,000 was coming out of their bottom line from 5 stores, 10 stores, 15 stores. I just gave you the number of 1,000. Imagine if that number was higher. So again, if you take 1,000 by 20 stores, if you do 1,000 by 20 stores, that's 20,000 people stealing out of, again, with 330 million people. So that's really not a lot. So you got 20,000 people at $900. That's $18 million that Walmart will be losing just off people stealing. What business can take that hit? None. Zero. So I would be on the lookout for Walmart if they start closing stores, because minimum wage is what people get paid at Walmart. The average worker at Walmart makes between $7 to maybe $15, depending on if you live in California or not, because minimum wage is $15 here. So if you're somewhere else in middle America, you're probably making $9 or $10. If they start closing stores, who's going to be affected by it? Most of the people that work at Walmart are lower income people. And that goes back to those folks that I was saying that they have a bunch of those people because they might have fired mid-level executives. So if mid-level executives are getting fired, Walmarts are closing. So now the lower income is getting affected. What is going to happen in the economy? If Walmart says they're going to start closing stores because people are stealing and the government doesn't do anything about those policies, be on the lookout. So I would look for trends like that. Look for trends like Target and Walmart, especially Walmart, because people started pivoting 3 months ago to going from Target to Walmart to start buying their groceries and things like that. So it said that people that were making $120,000 plus started shopping at Walmart instead of Target. So if we get the cut in the mid-level executives who were making the $102,000 plus, if they were shopping at Target and now they're at Walmart, and now Walmart starts to close, and now those people that are losing their jobs at Walmarts, do you see what can happen? Right? In addition to this, we have high inflation. So these are the kind of indicators that I'll be looking for if you guys are trying to figure out how to navigate in the next 2 or 3 years. So if Walmart just came out with this, I think it was 2 or 3 days ago where he just announced this. If the CEO of Walmart is saying this, it's because he's already projecting. He's already seeing the numbers. So if he's forecasting this, it's because he already knows. A CEO's job is to look into the future and know what's going on so that their business can sustain over the hump. Obviously, Walmart's Walmart, but they're obviously taking a big enough hit to where they got to start closing stores. I've never seen a Walmart have to start closing. I mean, Sears closed back in the day, but Sears is not Walmart. Walmart's Walmart, right? Everybody knows that. And so a lot of people don't like going there because they were going to Target, but now they can't afford to go there. So be on the lookout for if Walmart started closing stores, because if they're getting hit, like I said, 20,000, I mean, that's 1,000 people out of only 20 stores. And I know they're getting hit with more than 1,000 people stealing, for sure. So bottom line, I'm giving you guys indicators of things to be paying attention to that are like super obvious. I gave you guys about the debt crisis. So not only do we have $31 trillion, we now actually have close to $100 trillion with no businesses producing, and we're not getting any revenue coming in from the government, right? Because they obviously are over leveraged because they spent the $7 trillion. So where is the money going to come from? In all actuality, what's going to happen, they're going to print money again. That's just what they're going to do. I can't see it being no other way. They're going to start lowering rates again, probably in March or April. Or if they don't do that, then man, hang on. And they already said they're going to slow up on doing a rate hike. So I don't see them going past June of next year before they start turning around on these rates and doing some kind of quantitative easing. But I wouldn't depend on that, right? I don't got a crystal ball. This is just me, you know, thinking logical about, you know, certain things. And what I would be doing if I were you, I'll be leveraging my network. You know, you always hear the saying, your network is your net worth, which is true. You know what I mean? Like, I built my companies based off my network in the beginning, and then it started expanding. And even from there, I started, you know, still building my network more and more. And so now my network is my net worth, which is my reach is now across seas. But the reason why I'm saying leverage your network is because those people might have other resources that you don't have. So, for example, Mel's been on my podcast before. You know, we do a lot of real estate deals together. He ran into someone who just got into real estate, but she's really good at what she does. And she has a network of people with a bunch of money. So she came to Mel with a bunch of deals that she couldn't move. Mel is good at what he does. I told you guys he's good at finding properties and getting rid of them. And so she had a couple of properties. She lives in Alabama. He lives in Augusta. And so she found a property. Matter of fact, I bought one of them. And then she gave him like 15 other ones. And he sold those just like that. So after selling all those properties, you know, they just end up building a good relationship. And this is over the course of like 2 months that all this happened. And so she was like, you know what? I got a network of investors, or not even investors. I got a network of people that got a lot of money. And she's like, I'm thinking about trying to raise funds and I want to be able to do that. But she's like, I don't know how. I wish I can figure out how to tap into these people with money. And he was like, oh, you know, that's what I've done. That's what I do. And I, you know, still do it now. So he called me. She tapped into him. He tapped into me. He leveraged his resource. I told this man to start a fund and then create a second LLC that you guys can buy properties out of so that they have no connection. So you go out there and you raise $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000, and then you use another LLC and you go out there and buy properties and you leverage hard money, which would be me, the lender, to where you only got to put 10 or 15% down to flip properties. If you have a fund over here where you have $300,000 or $400,000 with a couple of investors and you say, hey, I guarantee you a 20% return over the course of a year, and you only need 10 or 15% down to put on a house, if you're buying a property in Augusta or Alabama that's only $80,000 or $100,000, you only got to put down 10 or 15 grand. So here you are with 10 or 15 grand, and you get the rehab included in these loans that we do for you guys, and you got $500,000 sitting over here. How many properties can you do with $500,000 and you only putting down 10 or 15 grand? And you only got to give these people a 20% return. Of course, these people that are in this fund are going to say yes. If they give you $100,000 a piece and they're getting 20% return annually on that, of course they're going to say yeah. You can do one deal and pay those people per the quarter. I mean, because if you do 4,000 a quarter to each of those people, yeah, if you do one deal, you make 35 grand. Yeah, that's one deal where you just now paid all the investors that you can keep on flipping, because you only got to essentially at most write them a check for $5,000 every 4 months. Who is not going to do that deal? Everyone's going to do that deal, especially those people that got money, because more than likely, if they got 100 grand to put up, they're an accredited investor and they just have that money sitting around. So now you got a $500,000. You only got to flip one property per month just to pay these people back for that quarter. You're going to flip way more houses than one house to be able to pay them back. So if you got all this money and you flipping 5 or 6 houses and you only got to use one house to pay them, that's a win-win. So I told him, this is what you guys do. Create a, let's say, Jim Bob fund, and then you create Jim Bob Properties LLC, and then you flip those properties to pay them their return. So both of those are shielded. Now you got two businesses that you can use for tax advantages. And then, I mean, it's just money that you have available. So if someone can, even if they got $200,000 or $300,000, $400,000, that's just way too much. They wouldn't even know what to do with it. But if they just went out here and raised $200,000, which is going to be easy for them, they're going to do this. They're going to kill it. So who wins? She wins. He wins. The investors win. I win, because they're going to come to me to get those loans. You see what I mean? So this is my example of saying leveraging your network. And that's just one example. I can give you 1,000 reasons on why you need to go out there and leverage your network, but you know your network better than I do. So I'm just giving you some tips for what I do as far as, you know, tapping into my network. And then also how I'm looking at the economy and how I'm moving through my business and helping some of my clients move through their business. But guys, I'll be leveraging my network, because you don't want to be left holding the bag when this goes the way it's going, right? So if you go back, and I've said it before, if you go back and listen to some of my podcasts, you can kind of see, man, and it's also mainstream now. So it ain't like it's just me that's saying this. So you got so many people that are saying this. Listen, pay attention. So use you come in and listening to this podcast for a reason. So listen to what I'm saying and pay attention. And then you go out there and do that, man. Leverage your network so you're not in a situation in a year from now where you mess around and lose your job out of nowhere. And you're like, oh, what am I going to do? So do it now if you still have a job. If you don't have a job, then you need to really be doing it, because the economy still, I guess what some would call decent. Some people still have a decent amount of savings in their account. So if you do that, start leveraging your network now. now, man. Start doing wholesale. If you know how to do that, pick up the Real Estate Investing Guide and learn how to wholesale from that book. We're still buying properties. I know a huge hedge fund that are still buying properties all throughout the U.S. So there's one or two people, I would say, as funds that are still buying properties if it meets their criteria. So guys, leverage your network, man. Leverage your network. Go out there, tap into people, and it's not got to be raising money per se, but it's first trying to line up another job or helping them with something that you have a skill set. You need to understand what your expertise is. And once you understand what your expertise is, because everyone has one, because we're still alive and we've done jobs and we've done different things, everyone doesn't always know the same thing as another person. So we all have our own expertise. So you can leverage your network using your own expertise and provide value to whoever you come in contact with or that's in your network. So figure out how to do that, man. And I swear to God, it'll make sure you get through this coming economic cycle. And then you might come out on the other end a millionaire, or you might come out on the other end better than you were when you went in, because you started providing value to more than one person. Because if you do it and it works out with this one person in your network, they're going to tell their person. They're going to tell someone. It's just going to keep going. It's a snowball effect. So guys, man, go out here, leverage your network and take advantage of the opportunities that are coming and the opportunities you have right now. All right, guys, take care. See you on the next episode.
Aren't you ready to start a business or grow your real estate investing portfolio? If you answered yes, allow Andre and the expert advisors at the Residual Roads Business Institute to fast track and put you on a path to full-time investing. The greatest transfer of wealth in our lifetime is occurring over the next few years, and you can take advantage if you know what to look for. In order to be successful at real estate investing, you need to learn how to leverage your current resources to generate quick money, big money, and retirement money. Let Residual Roads advisors craft a plan to get you through these phases using little or no money in 6 months or less. Don't wait for a job. Create one for yourself and others. Go to residualroads.com for mentorship, and for our free course, go to residualroads.thinkific.com.